The Difficult Kind.
Part 1 of the Difficult Kind series.
Written by Scout's Honor.
Read by Berylinthronox and Dirty Dirty Chai.
Before Beacon Hills. College acceptances arrive on a warm, windy spring day, the sky clear and blue and cloudless overhead. Stiles and Scott and Isaac and Boyd sit together on the bleachers, phones and laptops settled on their knees, comparing notes, hitting refresh and cracking their knuckles, waiting. The consensus has pretty much been Santa Cruz, which is close enough for weekend trips home and woodsy enough to run around in, but no one's sure if Scott and Isaac have the grades. Scott's yes comes in first, Isaac's a brutal 5 minutes later, and for a long moment, everyone sits there, breathless, the future for once easy and assured, ripe and ready for them. Scott recovers first, leaps off the bleachers hollering and howling, the shift rippling and rolling back over him as he turns, flips, and flips across the field. Boyd and Isaac go next, caught up in the moment, the fierce pleasure of abandoning responsibility and control for just a minute, and a minute more. Stiles thinks about joining them. Doesn't. Instead, he refreshes a couple of pages, gets a couple more answers. He opens the Excel file he's been using to keep track of everything, what was due where, which version got submitted when, and goes down the row entitled Accepted? Updating. Santa Cruz. Yes. Berkeley. Yes. UCLA. Yes. And then the back tab, the one he hasn't talked about with anyone. Amherst. Yes. NYU. Yes. Tulane. Yes. Yes, 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 he thinks, looking down the spreadsheet. Fuck. 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 The sheriff knows, of course, but no one else. Stiles hadn't seen the point in talking about it before, in making contingency plans based on half-assed hopes and a vague desire to go somewhere else, see something new. Now, though, looking at the list, he feels nothing but dread and certainty and a particular solemn lightness. I'm leaving, he thinks. I'm actually going to go. Amherst and NYU have offered him pretty paltry financial aid, but Tulane's got a tempting scholarship package, and New Orleans means a history of magic and voodoo and supernatural fuckery so that he can always find his way back to that if he misses it, if his fingers start to itch. He tries to picture it, Skyping with Scott, flying home for the holidays, and everyone looking just a little different, a half step off from where he left them. He lets himself imagine the thick, wet air and the narrow, winding streets, bars that don't close, all of the casual kinds of trouble he might finally be able to get into. It's 4 years, he thinks. I can come back, he thinks. I'm leaving, he thinks, and enlightens him enough that he starts tripping down the steps of the bleachers to find them, to run with them now, his pack, his brothers. If the last few years have taught Stiles anything, it's that news should be delivered swiftly and clearly to everyone at once. So he calls a pack meeting for after dinner and announces it. I'm going to Tulane, he says. I love you guys and I'm going to miss you like hell, but I need a break, so I'm going. I'm going to go. They mostly take it well. Scott will require a few extra days of shitty, stubborn pissiness because they're still best friends, but they get it. They all do. They are tied to the land and each other in their blood and bones, but Stiles isn't, has specifically and repeatedly chosen to keep himself and his body inviolate. Why would he have if he wasn't planning on taking advantage of that freedom? You'll come back, though, Isaac says, when Stiles tells them. And he says yes, and means it, or means it as much as he can when he isn't actually sure. Derek doesn't talk much during, but he pulls Stiles aside as he's leaving, brings him into the kitchen for a minute or two. Do you want coffee? He asks, and Stiles demurs. He's been trying to regulate his sleep cycle and caffeine intake and general regard for his physical state ever since the panic attacks got unmanageable midway through junior year. Even decaf at this point in the night will, he knows, mean sleeplessness now and lightheadedness tomorrow. I just wanted to tell you that I'm proud of you. Derek says, shy, gruff. It's cool that you got in, that you're going, that you're doing what you want. Yeah, Stiles says, thanks. I'm glad you're not pissed, actually. I kind of thought you might be. He means it casually, but Derek looks stricken, his head tilting up like a baby bird to gaze at Stiles through his eyelashes, pulse jumping in his throat as he swallows. I didn't think you were going to try to keep me or anything, Stiles amends. I knew you'd let me, I just didn't think you'd see it as a positive development. Derek sighs heavily, wipes his palms on his jeans. It occurs to Stiles for the first time ever that Derek is nervous, is walking carefully and speaking gingerly and trying to get it exactly right. I want you guys to have real lives, he says at last. I'm not going anywhere, but that's my fuck up, you know? It shouldn't have to be yours. Stiles has no idea what to say to this. You aren't that fucked up, he ventures at last, settling on something he's reasonably certain won't read as a lie. And you could leave too, you know. I mean, Beacon Hills is your territory, and I know it's ancestral. I know you put a lot into it. But if you want something else, you deserve your own life too, Derek. You really do. Derek shakes his head, and his eyes are sad and pale, face drawn and quiet. I did go away, he says. I was away for a long time. This is where I belong, and this is where I'm staying. I know I have a lot of work to do, and I know I need to do it here. Even for a little while, Stiles says. Even for a week or two, you could, Derek, you could go. Derek doesn't say anything, so Stiles gathers up his jacket and book bag, comes back into the kitchen. Derek is standing where Stiles left him, preternaturally still, and he doesn't flinch or withdraw when Stiles steps up close, puts one hand on his shoulder. Thank you, Stiles says again, tightening his fingers in one long squeeze before he slips out the door, heads for home. Stiles is also trying to work on leaving shit alone sometimes, but he can't help himself when it occurs to him. They should take a road trip. The Jeep can live and die in New Orleans, and he'll get to see the country, the South, make a long, slow transition, and Derek can get the fuck out of Beacon Hills for long enough, just long enough, to calm down. They'll go before the rest of the pack heads for UCSC so that someone can stick around to patrol. They'll have a bro-bonding experience. Stiles can work out his weird Derek-related pseudo-crush issues for once and for all, get trapped in a car with the dude and his farts, and realize that all of the perfect abs and thick eyebrows and secret bleeding hearts in the world aren't enough to make up for Derek's particular brand of crazy. He's a little shocked, though, when Derek agrees without putting up a fight. "Do you really want me to?" he asks, sounding tentative and surprised. And Stiles feels a little hollow, empty ping in his stomach, thinking about how often he's avoided Derek, done stuff without him, written him off like he doesn't matter and won't mind. Derek is a 24-year-old dude with no job, no family, and scant hobbies. He reads and runs and worries, as far as Stiles can tell. "It'll be good for you, man," Stiles says, "like we talked about." Derek looks dazed. "Like we talked about," he says. "Yeah, that might be nice." Stiles is even more surprised that the rest of the pack doesn't protest or ask to be brought along. Boyd and Isaac have summer jobs they can't leave anyway, and Scott is kind of the best about it. "You and Derek need to resolve your weird boners for each other," he says, "and I've seen how you drive, dude. I would probably spend the whole ride with my head in the bag trying not to hurl." "Werewolfiness definitely obviates motion sickness," Stiles says. Scott kind of cuffs him on the shoulder and looks all too fond when he says, "I'm not sure a road trip is a good time to test that hypothesis." So Stiles gives him some shit about his newfound knowledge of scientific jargon, pleased and proud to know that he has Scott's blessing for all of it.
Days 1 and 2, Los Angeles, California. The route is simple. 101 South to the 1 to the 10 East, till it ends. Derek fumbles with Styles' iPod as they pull out of the driveway, the artists and songs unfamiliar, playlists inscrutably titled Those Kind of Days, because Shut Up, Scott, 01100010010101100101010010101, 01100101, 01100101, 01100101. Eventually, he settles on Yes, and is gratified when something pretty and mellow tumbles out of the speakers. Cool, Styles says. I didn't know you liked Fleet Foxes. Derek shifts and shrugs, stares fixedly out the window. It's your playlist, he says. I don't really know any of this stuff. We can listen to yours, if you want, Styles offers, flinching slightly at Derek's pointed silence. Derek is glad he doesn't have to say it. I don't have an iPod. I barely have a laptop. 2 years ago, I was living in a house that looked like a burnt-out shell. I'm a mess, okay? Remember? Styles lets them ride out the awkward, angry quiet for a minute before he opens his mouth and rolls right over it, which is probably Derek's favorite thing about Styles, the way he can absorb other people's bad behavior and move past it, pressing through the world with a kind of open, affectionate acceptance, improbable in anyone, but especially someone who's been through all that Styles has. He finds it soothing, probably, to be with someone who doesn't need him to talk, who expects him to be moody and difficult. Derek has dipped into enough therapy to know that Styles affords him an all-too-rare safe space, an opportunity to explore trust with someone so guileless, so deserving, that Derek sometimes comes full circle, starts to wonder if holding back from Styles means that he is a monster, after all. Because he's aware of the thing, the way Styles feels, the thrum and rush of heat in his own cheeks sometimes when he catches himself looking. He's also aware that Styles is newly 18 and that being legal is different than being old enough, that Styles may never be old enough to take Derek on. He had his own innocence. Ugh, Derek thinks, words of a million therapists. But yeah, okay, his innocence taken and his trust abused. He got involved with an adult who broke his heart and killed his family. He's not going to take Styles anywhere he isn't ready to go. But Styles offered, and Derek accepted. Styles is driving. He's on his way somewhere. Derek can do this. He's allowed to be along for the ride. They roll down the last few miles of the Pacific Coast Highway as the sun sets, which is incredibly beautiful, the air thin and dry and yellow, sky and sea the same pale blue. It also means they're caught in terrible traffic, which doesn't abate in the slightest as they merge onto the 10. They're staying with some of Styles' dad's friends in West Hollywood, and it takes them a full hour longer than anticipated to crawl their way to Santa Monica and Doheny, emerging exhausted and stiff into a warm, soft night. Their hosts turn out to be a gay couple, Jason and Michael, which surprises Derek, though he can't quite say why. Their apartment is beautifully appointed and welcomingly disheveled, perched high enough in their building that the city is spread out in front of them, pinpricks of light glittering and blinking through the darkness below. There's a fuzzy, faded quality to the night. Derek isn't sure whether it's smog, or light bleed, or both, but it makes him feel a little twitchy to be so far from the moon, from any safe place to run. He doesn't like to think about himself as an animal. That's the Argents, insisting on instinct, on his difference from them and everyone else human. But after dark in a big city always makes him feel lonely and strange. Michael's still at work when they arrive, so Jason settles them in and offers them drinks. Derek refuses, but Styles happily accepts a beer, and another one with dinner. He's a total lightweight. By the third round, in the living room in front of the fireplace, he's pliant and pink-cheeked, laughing with his head thrown back at every story Michael tells. Apparently, West Hollywood is an intensely gay neighborhood. Though Michael met the sheriff when they were on the force together, years ago, he's since graduated to running security for a bunch of the clubs here, and he's got approximately a million tales of weirdness and debauchery and bodily fluids in places they aren't supposed to be. Derek catches himself on the point of offering a couple of anecdotes from his life of supernatural mishaps, and reins himself in, steals a sip of Stiles's beer. It's just that it's been so long since he talked to actual grown-ups, since he's been reminded of how strange and colorful other people's lives can be. Kate taught him the brutal lesson that humans weren't to be trusted, that they didn't understand, didn't want to, that most people lived limited lives and shunned deviancy and difference at all costs. Derek's been unlearning that lesson, slowly and surely, over the years, and sitting in this warm living room with this unlikely couple, with Stiles at his side, he feels it acutely, all of the things about the big world that his little life doesn't know. Michael notices Derek's silence, tries to draw him out.
"So are you in school?"
he asks, and Derek shakes his head before realizing that he's going to have to elaborate.
"I got my GED," he explains, "but there was a lot of family stuff going on, and it was just me and my sister, so we were moving around a lot. It just never seemed like the right time."
"What do you do now?" Jason asks. Derek says, completely blank, and God, it has been a long time since he interacted with adults, or at least adults who didn't know, who expected him to have some kind of normal, together life, or even a smooth lie to this line of questioning.
"Derek's interested in restoration," Stiles pipes up. "He's got this old family property he's been working on in Beacon Hills."
That's true enough, to a point, although progress is going much more slowly than Derek had envisioned when he moved back. The plan had been to get the house livable in 6 months, but it turned out that one guy with no background or experience couldn't work that fast. He spent hours reading, more at the hardware store, hiring guys and working with them, trying to figure it out.
"It's been a huge learning experience," Derek says, "but I love it. I love working with my hands and seeing the results. I love the way the space is starting to come together. I don't have a lot of family anymore, so it's nice to take care of what they gave me. What I do have, what's left."
Jason gives him an appraising eye before letting him know that Derek is welcome to try his hand at some DIY projects they've been putting off, if he's interested, while they're there. Derek feels, obscurely, as if he's passed a test, and he relaxes just a little bit, feeling tension ease out of his shoulders, draining from his temples, out his fingertips and toes. Stiles is so sleepy by the time they climb into the guest bed together that it isn't even a conversation. He shucks off his jeans and sweatshirt and curls up under the covers, boneless. Derek takes off his own t-shirt, thinks about putting on sweats, but decides against. He runs too hot for that, and he doesn't want to open the windows with Stiles in the room. Stiles breathes soft and even, looks impossibly younger with his jaw slack, limbs akimbo. Derek feels fiercely protective, desire down to the core of him to curve one hand around Stiles' sleeping shoulder and draw him closer, draw him in. He settles instead for sleeping with his body curled toward Stiles's, a protective parenthesis in the sheets. In the morning, Derek wakes up last to the sounds of Michael and Stiles in the kitchen making coffee, scent of burnt toast and cinnamon and oatmeal in the air, Stiles all over the sheets, and Derek. He buries his face in Stiles's pillow and keeps his eyes closed, thinking, 5 more minutes, please. But it doesn't stop him from hearing the conversation they're having, low and laughing.
"He's really... If I didn't know your father so well, I'd almost think you'd picked up a Santa Monica Pro before coming here, Stiles,"
Michael says, and Derek flushes hotly when he realizes they're talking about him.
"He could make a killing dancing in the clubs, or bartending. Jesus, that boy could make me a fortune."
Stiles laughs, delighted, and takes a long swallow of his coffee. Derek can hear the wet work of his mouth and throat, at which point he realizes he's eavesdropping shamelessly, and starts hustling himself out of bed. There's that old familiar twinge, Kate saying, "So pretty," and pressing kisses down the line of his stomach, kneeling between his knees. Last night's comfortable glow fades a little bit,
starts to seem tarnished and sad. It doesn't distract Derek enough to keep him from hearing Michael say, "Are you two, you know, together?" And Styles saying, "Nah, no, it's not like that at all." "So why did you bring him along?" Michael asks, and Styles doesn't even hesitate before he says, "He needed a break." Like that's an answer. "It's good of you to take care of him," Michael says gravely, and Derek can imagine all too easily the light in Styles' eyes when Michael adds, "You're like your mother that way. Both of them, actually. But you really do remind me of her." The plan is to spend an idle day in L.A., give them both a chance to stretch their legs and keep them from getting too antsy on the road. Michael's recommendation for lunch is a place called Square One, which is in a funny little neighborhood dominated by a massive blue Scientology center, a gleaming gold cross spearing high into the air above it. Beyond that, the hills are brown and dusky, chapped and sparse after the winter drought. They're going to burn come September. Derek can already smell it, combustion and crackle on the wind. Styles and Derek sit on the patio and eat wearing sunglasses, the air so dry everything seems electric, all static on the skin. After they eat, they drive up to the Griffith Observatory, the streets lined by rows of palm trees shooting up from cracked pavement into tangled electrical lines, signs for Thai restaurants and corner psychics blinking neon even in the morning sun. It's hot and bright, so they take a little hike up some nearby trails, look down on the city, hazy and brown in August smog. "Parts of Rebel Without a Cause were filmed here," Derek says, and Styles shrugs. "I've never seen it," he says, and Derek blanches a little bit, because he's never pop culturally one-upped Styles, or anyone, maybe ever in his life before. "Maybe we'll watch it tonight," Derek offers, and then, "Just because." Laura loved James Dean, in a kind of weird, obsessive way. Styles snorts. That makes your whole leather jacket and scowly thing kind of perverse, don't you think?" "She bought me that jacket," Derek says defensively, and Styles dissolves into a fit of laughter, his already sun-flushed face darkening with it. "Dude, then she was the perverse one. Whatever, I am not surprised that all Hales were weirdos." It's kind of a moment, but Derek is feeling weirdly wired and energized, and not all in the mood to brood, so he's willing to let it slide. Styles pauses, though, touches Derek gently on the shoulder to get him to pause, too. "Should we set up, like, ground rules?" he asks. "If we're going to be traveling together. Because sometimes I feel like I say the wrong thing, and I hurt your feelings, or make you sad, and I definitely don't want to piss you off if we're going to be in a car together 8 hours a day, but I wasn't kidding when I offered Derek. I want this to be good for you." It's fucking heartbreaking that Styles means that a kid whose best friend got turned into a werewolf 2 years ago, who spent the better part of high school battling evil and researching monsters and fearing for his life, for the lives of everyone around him, is concerned about Derek Hale's mental health. Derek is used to avoiding and deflecting and defending, being sassy and rude and smug and brooding and anything but honest. But he isn't enough of a dick to try any of that now. He quells the panic rising in his chest and just exhales a quick sentence, tries something out. "It is good for me, knowing that you care." "Oh," Styles says, flushing impossibly pinker, color climbing to the tips of his ears. "I'll let you know if I start freaking out," Derek says, "but don't worry so much, okay?" "Okay," Styles says. "Can we go down now, then? Not all of us are immune to sunburn, and if I show up on my first day of college peeling, I'm going to be the one freaking out." They hike down in companionable silence and stop by the gift shop before leaving, where Styles buys dumb souvenirs for everyone in the pack and a postcard for his dad. They nap away the afternoon and watch Rebel Without a Cause after dinner, and if Styles' heartbeat quickens perceptibly every time James Dean sneers, well, Derek isn't going to be the one to bring it up.
Day 3, Tucson, Arizona. The drive from Los Angeles to Tucson is impossibly bright and hot and flat, hundreds of miles of freeway and cacti and nothingness. Derek takes first shift, and Stiles curls up against the doorframe, pressing his forehead to the window and staring out. So far, so good, he thinks. He'd spent the first hour in the car wondering if the whole trip was going to be like this. Derek difficult and prickly and unwilling. But Los Angeles went okay. Was kind of fun, even, in parts. He's glad to have seen Michael and Jason, familiar characters from years of visits back and forth, to have had them to ease him into it, the whole thing of being away from home. He had thought Los Angeles was kind of alien and pretty and fascinating, but Arizona is on a whole other level. In the August sun, the world seems to have subsided to a tired, dusky khaki color, little adobe buildings and stucco strip malls flashing by along the highway. I don't think I've ever been here before, Stiles says idly. He's surprised when Derek responds right away. Oh, I have. When you were a kid? We took a lot of road trips, Derek says. There were 6 of us, so it was expensive to fly anywhere, and traveling with a pack, even when it's just a family, can get complicated. So we'd drive out to national parks and preserves and stuff, meet up with cousins. It was nice. Did you camp? Stiles asks, because he can't imagine it at all. Derek, hale of the Camaro and leather and a purposeful bedhead, waking up in a tent, drinking crap coffee, brushing his teeth with water from a spigot. Of course, it was a long time ago, and Derek was a kid, and it was before. Stiles thinks wistfully, and not for the first time, of the way that part of Derek's life is mostly shuttered from him, inaccessible and carefully guarded. Of course, Derek says. We'd hike into somewhere remote and set up so the kids could run and shift all day, which we weren't normally allowed to do. It was always the best kind of holiday, to get to wolf around with the cousins. Do you miss them? Stiles asks. And Derek shrugs and frowns, the corners of his eyes tightening beneath his sunglasses. Sorry, Stiles says. Too much? But Derek just frowns more deeply and shakes his head once. Of course I miss them, he says at length. But it was kind of a long time ago, now. When I think of them, they're still kids, you know? Still children. I can't imagine what they'd be like now, what my life would be like if they were still here. It's a special kind of lunacy, Stiles acknowledges, to be driving through the Southwest in August. It must be 90 in the shade, and Arizona seems to be comprised entirely of sand and asphalt. Heat radiating up from the blacktop as he lugs his bags from the car to their hotel room. It's surprisingly nice, a fancy resort-style place for $75 a night, because only crazy people travel through Tucson at this point in the summer. There's a trailhead nearby that Derek can't get sunstroke hail is off running, but Stiles has his eye on the swimming pool, lavish pictures of which adorn most of the lobby, a promising reminder that money can buy luxury and comfort and water in the desert. First, though, he spends 5 minutes in the dark, cold interior of their room, sprawling himself over one of the beds and mussing up the covers to claim it before remembering that Derek will be able to smell him there anyway. Derek is good, quiet, easy company most of the time, but it's nice to be alone for a second, out of range of his senses, his intensity and tendency to sneak up unnoticed. Stiles briefly considers jerking off, knowing he won't have the chance for the next few days at least, but decides against. He doesn't want to get up, to worry about the smell hanging around after. Instead, he takes off all his clothes and examines his naked body in the full-length mirror. Broad shoulders, slim waist, big hands, strong calves, the whole of him pale and wiry, dusted all over with freckles and moles. He's not unattractive, he knows. Girls have started looking at him sometimes, the guys at the jungle when he can sneak in, though traveling with Derek means that no one's given him a second glance in days. He's grown out his hair, which means he doesn't look quite so much like a 12-year-old anymore. He made out with a guy on the dance floor once who twisted his fingers in it, pulled Stiles around by the scruff in a way that made him instantly, painfully hard. Made him wonder whether he'd always liked getting pushed around a little bit, or if that was strictly a post-Derek thing. Styles tries not to worry about it, the way sex and violence have gotten confused in his mind, Derek throwing him against walls and lockers and murmuring into his airspace. The time fucking fairies invaded Beacon Hills and he almost came all over himself with one of their knives to his throat. He's pretty sure he's still on the spectrum of normal. Probably surprisingly normal, given all of that. But it's not like he's had any opportunity to test it, to figure out his boundaries or anyone else's. His dick stirs a little bit at this train of thought, Derek pressing him down and taking him apart, asking, "Can I?" saying, "Let me." So he turns away quickly, pulls on trunks and grabs a towel and keys. The light outside is so achingly bright that he feels stripped and raw, and diving into the cold blue water is sweet, deep relief. They eat Tex-Mex for dinner, somewhere cheesy and loud, waitresses clad in stiff cowboy boots and tiny cutoffs, red pepper lights strung across the rafters. Afterwards, they take a walk, the night slightly cooler but still warm enough that Styles is sweating lightly, a persistent layer that blooms and dries in the breeze. Meandering back towards the hotel, they pass a bar that looks likely, a run-down, ramshackle place with one bored, handsome bartender. "Let's go in," Styles suggests, producing a fake ID in answer to Derek's quirked eyebrow. It was a going-away gift from Scott, and he's excited to put it to use for the first time. He's expecting some kind of, "I'm an adult, I'm responsible," protest from Derek, but he gets none. And soon they're sitting in a little room that's mostly empty, a fan spinning and clattering overhead.
"I guess I don't really know what to order," Styles says, rubbing his hands together in nervous delight. "I guess you don't really know either, huh?"
Derek smiles sharply. It's the kind that Styles used to think was his fuck you grin, but is, in fact, just Derek enjoying a private joke like the dickhole he is. "I actually bartended for a while," he says, "in New York."
"So what do you recommend?"
"Depends on what you want," Derek says, looking Styles straight in the eye, and he feels lust like a live wire sparking in his gut. It isn't fair that Derek looks like that, that he can just say shit, casual as ever, and make Styles feel like this. It probably isn't fair to Derek either, though, Styles thinks, that he can just say shit and have people react to him like this, that he has to smell it. A world full of dirty thoughts constantly being projected in his direction.
"I like whiskey," Styles says, and Derek leaves him at the table,
returns with some decent bourbon on ice.
"Can I pay you back?" Styles asks,
but Derek just shakes his head. "Next round," he says, and Styles returns his wolfish, unrestrained grin, tips his head back, and lets the booze burn down the back of his throat. Styles is drunk by the time they leave, the night sky dark enough for him to pick out constellations on the walk back. He isn't slurring or stumbling, but he feels powerful and lit up, his veins fizzing with desire and energy, the promise of being all alone in this new place. "Let's swim," he says, pulling Derek down the hallway past their room.
"I want to swim and I'm drunk, so you have to come with me, make sure I don't drown."
Derek laughs and lets himself be pulled along. He vaults the locked gate and lets Styles in. They strip down to their boxers, Styles tipsy enough to be easy and unselfconscious. He even stretches a little bit before diving in, preening in the moonlight. He swims the length of the pool once, twice, holding his breath, coming up gasping in the shallow end to find Derek standing on his hands, funny little delicate ankle sticking out of the water.
"It isn't fair," Styles says when Derek finally emerges. "You can hold your breath forever. You don't get drunk, you're invulnerable, and I'm gonna have a hangover tomorrow."
Derek smirks. Styles thinks that he's not sure he likes relaxed Derek, who's turning out to be kind of on the sassy side. "There are things we can do," Derek says. "Herbs and stuff. It's not like I can't, actually, you know."
"We're picking some up tomorrow," Styles says. "I'm gonna see you tripping balls at some point, man, or I will consider this entire thing a total failure."
"Fair enough," Derek says, and dives back down. Styles ducks under too, opening his eyes and letting the chlorine burn and blind him, finding Derek's body in the dark water. He's slippery and solid, and Styles means to push him over, but Derek's too steady,
and Styles' hands can only grasp at him, the two of them floating for a suspended second before Derek reacts and pulls Styles in closer, tucking him into an underwater headlock. Styles panics. He wasn't kidding before. Derek seems to be able to hold his breath like a pearl diver, but Derek surfaces before his lungs even start to burn, still holding Styles firmly against his chest. Then Styles starts panicking about something else entirely, heart hammering because this is precisely the kind of rough handling he prefers, and there's no way Derek won't notice. In fact, Derek does seem to be nosing him a little bit as he swims over and deposits Styles on the ledge above the shallow end, hoisting himself up and out of the water to sit beside him. Water streams down Derek's shoulders, the nape of his neck. It gets caught in his eyelashes, little pools forming in the hollows of his collarbones. Styles is suddenly breathless with want. He feels desire like a lunar pull, low in his gut. "Styles," Derek says, soft, understanding. "Don't. You're drunk." "Would you let me if I wasn't?" he asks, stupid, honest. "I would think about it," Derek says, standing up too quickly, walking back to the room without looking to see if Styles will follow.
Day 4. Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. Styles does have a hangover. Derek did the brunt of the driving to Tucson, but he takes first shift again when they get on the road, leaving Styles in the car to suffer while he runs a few errands first, gets them both coffee and egg sandwiches for breakfast. It should be awkward, but it isn't. It's actually easier, Derek thinks, having it out in the open like this. It helps that they didn't have to sleep in the same bed last night, though Derek could smell the lingering arousal, after, the way Styles shifted and muttered in his sleep, both of them half-hard all night long. Luckily, it's a short drive, 4.5 hours, most of it north to a hot springs in New Mexico that Michael recommended, a deviation from their original route, but probably worth it, for a day spent soaking on the banks of the Rio Grande. Styles sleeps, mostly, waking every now and again to change the music, some of which Derek is starting to recognize, songs and bands Styles plays again and again. The landscape remains lunarly empty and harsh, the desert air dry and oven-hot on the windshield, through the glass. It's around 3 p.m. when they arrive, the worst of the day's heat starting to abate, but still brutal in the sun. They check in and head to town, get deli sandwiches for lunch. Styles drinks a massive Coke and seems revived by the food and the sugar.
"I'm fucking pissed I forgot about those herbs," he says, swallowing the last of his sub. "I was really looking forward to seeing you messed up on the riverbanks."
Derek smiles a little secret smile, thinking of the brown paper bag he picked up this morning. It seems only fair, after all, since he got Styles drunk last night. Just because. Derek's never been drunk, but it looks fun, and he likes it. The way Styles' pupils widen, his throat flushes, he trails his long fingers over everything, marveling at what it feels like to be touched. He had forgotten the way it messed with a person, making them all too pliable, horny, and eager. He's glad they didn't, that Styles knew enough to accept his no at face value. Derek is getting reckless and selfish, he knows, but he can't bring himself to stop. Here they are, out in the middle of the country where no one can find them, and there's no one to care. Derek hasn't been alone and anonymous like this since he and Laura were running together, just the two of them, lost and free, in Minnesota, Montana, Vermont, New York. He's glad to be settled in Beacon Hills now, and he misses it. Feels the house and the preserve and his pack calling him home, but he's glad to be reminded that there's still something left to him out here in the world. It's a hard lesson, Derek thinks, to know that you and your skin are the only home you need if you're just going to survive. That you can lose everyone you love and your body will keep on breathing and eating and shitting, fucking and wanting, hoping. That's the worst part. Knowing that you want it, that you're glad you got to keep it, protective of it, even still. He's always known that he could walk away from everything, abandon Beacon Hills and Scott and Isaac and Boyd. He could do it all again, so it's comforting to know that he doesn't want to, that he wasn't lying to Michael before about what it means to him to be rebuilding that house, his family's home. This doesn't solve the Stiles problem. What to do about Stiles, who is leaving, who doesn't want to stay. Derek watches him gather up their trash and head back out to the Jeep, sunny and smiling the whole time, and forces himself not to wonder about what ifs. There are no guarantees, he knows, just this day and the next one, the two of them and the road. Back in the hotel room, Stiles surfs through the television channels, all basic cable, very boring. He dumped his stuff on one of the beds earlier, but is currently sprawled across the other. Derek pretends not to mind, and sets the herbs he bought this morning out on the table, sorting them into piles, trying to figure out what else he'll need to make this work.
Oh shit, Stiles says, eyes wide. Are those what I think they are? Werewolf weed, basically, Derek acknowledges, casting about the room for a makeshift mortar and pestle, eventually deciding that a ceramic mug and a spoon from the coffee service will have to do in a pinch. I told you I had errands to run this morning. Does this mean we should go back into town and procure me a bottle of Jack?
I'd rather you didn't, actually. This stuff is usually pretty mellow, but I haven't done it in years, and I'd like one of us to be in his right mind while I'm on it.
Does that mean you trust me?
Stiles asks, eyes alight. With my life, Derek says. Easy, because it's true. He's trusted Stiles with his life almost every day since he met him, after that first Wolfsbane bullet, and then in the pool, against the Alphas, against 100 enemies, both lethal and ordinary. He feels the air in the room shift, the way Stiles's heart beats slow and heavy, not his usual arousal and excitement, but something tender and full.
Thanks for taking care of me last night, he says,
and Derek means it when he replies.
Anytime. So are you gonna smoke it now?
Stiles asks, watching Derek's hands work intently.
Nah, Derek replies. Later, I was thinking, we could go out at night. I actually, reserved us a private pool when I called to get the room. I was thinking I could do it there.
He doesn't have to look up to know that Stiles likes this idea. Derek catches the shiver of heat that passes over Stiles' body, tries not to think about what it's going to be like tonight, under the moon, the enormous dark sky. When they asked him on the phone, he made a decision. He knows approximately where this is going, but there are still guarantees. No sense in getting ahead of himself.
We should go out to the Riverside once before that, though,
Stiles says, pressing up off the bed.
I think it might be cool enough now, to be bearable.
Derek nods his assent and keeps working while Stiles changes, willing himself not to look. Plenty of time for that later, and besides, what he's doing requires concentration. It's not a finicky preparation, particularly, but Derek likes to get it right. His hands remember the dance of it, grinding herbs and measuring spoonfuls in the shitty apartments he and Laura shared, the smell of the smoke against cold, dry air coming in where they had the windows cracked, just a little bit, in the winter. Stiles sits down in the chair next to him as Derek starts to roll the first joint, feeling clumsy and self-conscious under that frank, appraising gaze.
You change, he says, and let me. I've, mastered this particular skill set.
Derek knows. He noticed junior year, when the panic attacks were really getting awful, when Stiles declared himself off-limits to supernatural drama for an entire month and just stayed home, hung out with his dad, maybe. Anyway, came back smelling less like coffee and exhaustion and desperation. calm and centered in a way he'd never been before. He didn't get stoned often, he explained to Isaac and Boyd at some point, Derek not quite lingering upstairs in order to overhear, but it was nice to have in his back pocket, the opposite of Scott's old inhaler, something medicinal on hand for when it got to be a little too much. Derek stands and strips off his shirt, glancing over his shoulder in time to see Stiles' wet pink tongue dart out to lick the strip of rolling paper, his long fingers tight at either end. He rolls three more joints with what Derek's mixed, swift and sure and easy, and Derek can't move, can't stop watching. When Derek met Stiles, he was gawky and awkward. Those big hands and his huge eyes haunted underneath the sharp buzz of his hair, in the tight lines of his face. He looked like a teenager, someone growing into himself unsteadily and unevenly. Now he's sitting in a hotel room in New Mexico, rolling joints with delicate precision, thin, pretty things with a scalloped paper tulip at the far end, and Derek thinks of all the things those hands have done in the meantime. They've worked spells, held wild animals, pulled arrowheads out of his friend's skin. Stiles isn't a grown man yet, but he's getting there. And someday those hands are going to be smoothing over someone else's skin, through someone else's hair, rolling perfect joints in crappy, tiny dorm rooms, gripping beer bottles and dance partners and pens in class. Stiles will keep taking care of himself the way he always has. Derek thinks that it might be okay to be a little selfish, to ask and to take, just for the duration, for the week. It will be heat and delirium, high school fantasy fulfilled. There's the deadline on it, and all of Stiles' future to make up for it, after. The public pools sit just on the banks of the Rio Grande, the river low and muddy this late in the season, rolling sluggishly by. Still, though, it's a pretty, pretty view, the mountains red-brown in the distance, sky a deep, even blue. Derek is pleased to discover that the water doesn't reek of sulfur, and he settles in on one of the stone benches as Stiles dips a nervous toe in from the ledge. Come on, Derek urges, and Stiles shrugs, smiles crookedly, saying, I'm kind of a wimp about the temperature, okay? Just give me a minute. So Derek gets to watch Stiles enter by degrees, his feet and ankles on the top step for a while before he slides into his knees, to mid-thigh, pink flesh creeping up just above the waterline as he descends. The sun is starting to sink a little bit in the western sky, turning everything rosy gold. Derek feels the whole world humming about him, the desert beginning to buzz with life. Cicadas have been going all day, but now they're joined by scritches and scratches, lizards and snakes and scorpions thinking about emerging at last. The air smells sweet and clean and unfamiliar. When did you start to trust me? Derek asks, eyes fixed on the horizon. I don't really know, Stiles says, shifting in the water so Derek can feel it, the rock and splash of ripples on his skin. It wasn't a decision, really, I don't think. Or maybe it was, at first, when I found out that Scott was lying to me about Gerard, and I was so sick. So fucking sick of no one trusting anyone, and I thought, you know, okay, all in, I'm trusting everyone, I'm working with everyone. If I can't get out of this shit, I may as well be deep in it. But then the panic attacks, Derek says. The panic attacks, Stiles agrees. It was too much. I needed to back off, to find out where I was in the middle of everything. And you let me go. You didn't push me or come to me, you let me go. And that's probably when I really, when I separated you out from my life of supernatural suffering. When I started to see you as a person. A wolf. Wolf person? Whatever. When I saw how you were taking care of Isaac. When I saw that Boyd trusted you. When even Scott had to admit that you were trying. It wasn't any one thing, but that's when it happened, as soon as the panic subsided. Derek remembers it, the way Stiles' scent changed, from hyper-electric arousal and anxiety to something slower, more considering. When he came back, he chalked it up to adjusted chemistry, one way and the other, Never thought that it might be part of a conscious process.
So I know you'd let me go now, too, I guess.
Styles goes on, thoughtful, working it out into the still, dry air.
You've been a lot of things, Derek, but never selfish. You've never tried to keep anyone who didn't want to be kept.
I tried to catch Scott for a long, long time, Derek says. I bit kids who didn't really know any better, promised them things I couldn't give them. You were the only one who was smart enough to say no.
Styles rolls his eyes. You were terrified, dude, he says. I mean, you lost the last person you loved. You were being hunted by, like, 3 separate parties at once. You didn't make the very best decisions, sure, but you didn't break anybody either. I mean, I was being kind of a shithead about everything 2 years ago, too.
You still are a shithead, Derek says, fondly, and Styles reaches out to give him a shove that devolves into a splashing match that only stops when an older couple shows up and gives them deeply disapproving looks. The sun sets around 8:30. The private pool is theirs from 9 until 11. It's almost full dark when they arrive, the very last of the day's glow, a lingering corona on the horizon, sky a deep, bruise-colored purple overhead. Derek has 2 of the joints and a book of matches in the pocket of his trunks. He sits on the ledge and lights one up as Styles does his easing into the water routine, inhaling the familiar sage smoke scent deep into his lungs.
I didn't ask earlier what was in there, Styles says. I feel like I should know, in case I need to take you to the hospital for, like, herb poisoning or whatever.
Derek laughs.
That's not possible, as far as I know, he says. But for the record, it's mostly sage and a particular kind of wolfsbane, bred to be less potent. The sage is supposed to be purifying. This stuff is supposed to be used in rituals and ceremonies. And then there are some stabilizing agents, things you can use to control the kind of high you're getting.
I didn't know there were ceremonies, Styles says, paused on the middle step with his knees in the water, fingertips trailing at the surface.
There are,
Derek says, exhaling a thick lungful of smoke, feeling the burn as it leaves him.
I just don't know them, really. I was too young to participate before. And then Laura and I didn't have much use for it, just the 2 of us. But you're supposed to mark it when PAC members join and leave, when someone gets married, has a baby, when they die.
So we should have done something official before I left?
That depends, says Derek evenly, determined not to take more than is on offer. Are you leaving Beacon Hills, or are you leaving the PAC?
Styles has taken the last step into the water, his body pale and still in the moonlight. Instead of answering, he draws close to Derek, where he's sitting on the ledge with his calves in the water.
Beacon Hills, I think, he says,
and Derek has never seen him so focused before, almost hypnotized, gaze narrow.
But I can't make any promises, and I don't want to lie to you.
You don't have to come back in order to be part of the pack, Derek says, and Styles draws impossibly closer, insinuating himself between Derek's spread thighs.
You just have to want it, to want in.
Derek takes one last drag off of the joint, which is pretty much cached, and grinds it out on the pavement, slipping the unsmoked one in his lighter out alongside it, making sure they're clear of any damp. The smoke is spreading through his body like branches, through his veins. He feels light and clean and powerful. He can hear with perfect clarity the river rushing beyond them and the rasp of Styles' breath.
I do, Styles says. I want in.
And he tilts his mouth towards Derek's, sealing their lips together as Derek exhales the last of the smoke. Styles doesn't quite inhale. He takes it like an offering and lets it out in the space between their faces so that everything smells like sage and Styles and water when he starts to kiss Derek for real.
Styles' hands are curled over the sharp lines of Derek's jawbone, fingers pressed tightly into the hinge of his jaw. Derek feels it in his skull, the resonance of the kiss, the fierce desire behind it. Styles crowds in and kisses like he's dying, like he's trying to tell Derek something, something tender and necessary. Derek slides forward until his hips are flush with Styles' waist, knees pressing against empty air, before straightening his legs and easing himself into the water. It's a hot, sharp shock to his sensitized skin. Too much all over. "Shh, Derek. Oh, fuck," Styles says, hands everywhere at once, touching Derek's shoulders, his back. Derek arches into it. He gets his fingers and Styles' hair and tugs a little bit, just enough to get Styles' throat back where he can bite at it. Styles makes a wrecked, needy noise, and his knees sag, his hips and the line of his cock pressing, unmistakably, against Derek's. "You're so hard," Derek says, wondering, losing his concentration now to look down at the thick bulge in Styles' trunks. He doesn't even care how stupid stoned he sounds. "You're so hard for me." "Yeah," Styles breathes. "Of course I am. I'm always." "Let me see," Derek says, tugging at Styles' waist, greedy and impatient. Styles lets go of Derek long enough to hoist himself onto the ledge, pulling off his trunks, gasping a little as his wet cock meets the cool kiss of night air. He's red and leaking already, dick curving up against his belly, the trail of dark hair there. His hands are wet from the pool, but he licks one palm thoroughly, holding Derek's gaze all the while. "Touch yourself for me," Derek says, coaxing. "Let me. I'm a little fucked up. I don't think I can handle. I want to look at you. Jesus Christ, your hands!" Styles' eyes go impossibly darker, narrowing slightly as his breath hitches once, twice in his throat. "Tell me," he says. "Keep telling me what to do." And he closes one hand around his dick, throws his head back, and moans, something dark and rough enough that it almost sounds like a howl. I want to see you," Derek says. "I want to know what you look like when you come undone." Derek feels paralyzed, the warm water soft and perfect around his body, Styles working himself fast and thorough, hips twitching up helplessly, dick jerking in his palm. The sky is black now, star bright, and the moon getting close to full, pale light spilling down over Styles, making silver shadows in the desert beyond. It's intense. Everything is so intense that Derek doesn't even notice how hard he is until Styles comes, gasping and swearing, and he thinks, suddenly, "Oh fuck, please." Then there's no time to be elegant or graceful. He's incredibly fucking close, so he presses himself out of the pool and spreads his legs, leaning back, lets Styles finish shaking through the last of his orgasm before turning towards Derek, placing one tender kiss against the skin on the inside of his knee. Styles gets one hand up on Derek's belly, pressing him down against the pavement, and the sight of it is almost enough. The curl at his knuckles, the bitten down tips of his fingers, the whole hot spread of sensation. Styles, at last. "I'd suck you off," Styles says, dark and private. "But you're not gonna last, are you?" "We'll do it later. We'll do it when you're sober. Come on, Derek, please, let me see you come." And Derek does, with a shout.
Say when I'm gone away, my lover came to me, and we lay in rooms unfamiliar, but until now.
Day 5. Austin, Texas. Stiles wakes up first and creeps into the bathroom, runs the shower, and gazes blearily at his reflection. I'm not a virgin, he thinks, and then, am I still a virgin? He considers texting Scott for clarification, but the idea of going into the details makes him physically cringe in the empty bathroom, so he decides against. Besides, it's not like Derek didn't seem interested in more last night. So what if they didn't exactly touch each other? And so what if Derek passed out the minute they got back to the room, sleepy and pliable like a puppy? He pulled Stiles down onto the bed just before losing consciousness entirely, slept with his face tucked against Stiles' shoulder, came groaning to the sound of Stiles' voice last night. Stiles feels nervous, but not panicked. The familiar business of showering is a welcome distraction. When he emerges, Derek is sitting up in bed, checking his phone, frowning thoughtfully. Stiles freezes in the doorway, one hand impulsively clutching at the towel wrapped around his waist. Hey, he says, choking on the word, and then, once more with feeling, hi. Hi, Derek says, and he doesn't look perturbed or pissed or anything, so that's a good sign. In fact, he looks kind of like he did last night, the lines of his face a tiny bit smoother, something softened at the edge of his eyes. Are we okay? Stiles asks, and Derek looks confused, so he goes on. I mean, you were the one who was high. I probably shouldn't have started anything, so I'm sorry if that wasn't what you wanted. Was it what you wanted? Derek asks, careful, and Stiles groans, rolls his eyes. We aren't going to play 20 questions about this, dude. You asked me if I wanted into your pack, and I kissed you. I think the message was pretty clear. What I need to know is, did I take it too far, or can I get back in that bed now, okay? Can you just tell me that, please? Instead of saying anything, Derek holds open the covers, and Stiles can see that he's hard again, dick flushed and pretty in the light coming in through the blinds. Stiles may be insecure, but he isn't an idiot. He crawls right into bed, accidentally kneeing Derek in the process, mouthing along Derek's collarbone, inhaling the musky, sleepy scent of him. We really don't have time for this, Derek says, his voice somewhere between strained and amused. Check out is in like half an hour. Seriously? Stiles says, nosing Derek's armpit, feeling a little vulnerable about it, about the way Derek's hands are still at his side. That's your excuse? It's not an excuse, Stiles, it's a fact. And there's nothing I want to do to you that I can accomplish in half an hour. Stiles shakes a little bit, bites back a truly embarrassing series of sounds, wonders intently about how soundproof their Austin hotel room is. I'm not sure I can wait that long, he says, voice almost a whine, and Derek presses up, manhandles Stiles onto his back, and leans down to suck an impressively thorough hickey into the tender skin at the base of Stiles' neck. Stiles feels wrecked already, hair triggered tight and ready to come undone. Derek is breathing hard, hands fluttering indecisively for a bare moment before he slides one hot thigh between Stiles's, gets a hand up between them, and mutters, fuck it, whatever, they can wait. Even after definitely probably losing his virginity, Stiles finds the drive from Truth or Consequences to Austin kind of torturous. The land remains flat and brown and windswept, actual enormous tumbleweeds sometimes ambling across the highway, coming at the Jeep's windshield at speed. And there's no cell service, no 3G, nothing but scorched cotton fields, abandoned gas stations, the occasional cattle ranch. It's 10 hours, all told, and Stiles anticipated it being boring, but he hadn't accounted for what it might be like to do 10 hours in a car with someone you were dying to get your hands on, someone you'd always been dying to get your hands on, and with whom that had recently become miraculously possible. Stiles' mind can't stay away from it, Derek shivering and shaking, his cock jerking in Stiles' fist, eyes screwed tightly shut, mouth slack and open. Stop it, Derek pleads, more than once. I can't drive when you smell like that. But it's impossible, with Derek's fingers on the gear shift and his thighs flexing underneath his jeans, wearing a t-shirt because the Jeep's AC is kind of starting to falter, which is terrifying, at noon in West Texas in August. Just pull over, Stiles says finally, I don't think I can concentrate until you fuck me. Jesus, Derek. Just looking at you. Have you been holding out on me? Because I swear to God. And Derek growls, grips the wheel with frankly terrifying force, nails lengthening visibly. You absolutely cannot say shit like that. And you can't keep whatever it is you're doing. When I can't even crack a window. It stinks of sex in here. You're lucky we're not in a ditch already. Why not then? What's wrong with the Jeep? Stiles asks, mostly kidding, but Derek kind of freezes up a little bit, body stiffening back into its familiar posture of tense defensiveness. I've had sex in cars, he says finally, shortly. It's too cramped and I hate it. Okay, Stiles says, sorry, and subsides into the first really awkward silence since they pulled out of Derek's driveway in Beacon Hills. He's dying to hear more about Derek's past, who he fucked and when. Under normal circumstances, it would make him unbearably jealous, but this is the first legitimate confirmation he's had that Derek wasn't a virgin too this morning, and there's just too much he's curious about to let jealousy get in the way. He's also not interested in fighting, and even though Derek didn't explicitly ask him to stop, Stiles is pretty familiar with that particular terse tone, one that means Stiles has stumbled far too close, whatever it is, that keeps Derek in such tight knots all the time. I wasn't holding out on you, Derek says, half an hour and a numbing amount of basically unchanging scenery later. You were 16 when I met you. It wasn't like that. It's like that now, though, right? Stiles asks, gratified by Derek's solemn nod. So when did it change? Did you agree to this trip with, like, designs on my virtue? I could ask you the same question, Derek shoots back, and before Stiles can call him on deflecting, he holds up one hand, palm out, to stay the remark. I guess I started thinking about it in the fall, he says, when you were going on college visits with your dad and Melissa and Scott, and you'd come back smelling like other places, other people, and I didn't like it, in a different way that I didn't like it on Scott or Isaac or Boyd. I wasn't angry or anything. I just wanted to get close to you, to make sure you knew that you were pack, and at some point I... Derek trails off into an embarrassed silence. I tried not to think about it, he concludes. I didn't want to make this complicated before you left. I didn't want to hold you back. Stiles shakes his head in wonder and amazement. You're crazy, he says. You're so crazy, Derek. You knew what I wanted. You must have known all along, and you didn't think we should just... Did you want my first time to be with a stranger? This conversation seems to be giving Derek emotional whiplash. His face is as plaintive and confused as Stiles has ever seen it. I wanted your first time to be with someone normal, he says, fierce and miserable, biting out the words. I knew you liked looking at me, but I didn't think... Anyway, it doesn't matter, does it? Do we have to talk about this now? Stiles can almost see it, Derek winding himself up and putting himself away, the lax, easy man he spent the last few days with disappearing by degrees before his eyes. He feels lost and scared all of a sudden, terrified of Derek's changeableness, how he can just go away like this. Maybe this wasn't such a great idea, he thinks, and he chastises himself for it, for being just like everyone else who's scared of Derek, who thinks he's too much work. The thought lingers for the rest of the drive, though. What isn't he telling me? What is it that I can't know? Things are marginally less tense when they roll into Austin, mainly because they're both exhausted. Stiles doesn't even rouse himself to make a joke about the extraordinary phallic sign for their hotel, the Austin Motel. He feels frayed and threadbare, tired from the sun and dirt and dust, the interminable road, Derek's intractable silence. Are you hungry? He asks, once they've checked in. The reservation was for a room with one queen, because that's all they had in the first place, and Derek didn't fight with the desk clerk about it, so he feels like they might still be somewhere near the right track. Derek is hungry, and Stiles is starving, so they walk up South Congress to Gueros, order a bunch of tacos, and sit outside, under their neon green and pink sign. The food is delicious and messy. Styles finds himself licking a trail of chorizo grease from the side of his palm, up the tip of his pinky, looks up to find Derek's gaze on him heavy and heated. It's such a relief that Styles leans over impulsively, kisses the side of Derek's mouth, lips barely grazing against stubble and skin. "Want to watch me get drunk?" he asks, and Derek nods, silent, grabs Styles' hand when they stand up to go. The bars are all noisy and crowded. South Congress is a busy street. Styles recalls reading somewhere on the internet when this trip was just a summer daydream, something distant on the horizon. He orders a beer and a shot, $5 on special, and slams the shot, chugs half the beer before turning to Derek, winding his arms around his taut, narrow waist, dragging him in close enough to touch all over. They're playing country, something twangy and dancey. Styles sways Derek's hips along with his own. Styles has always been a legitimate klutz, but that doesn't extend to the dance floor, mostly. Whatever it is he does there seems to work for people, or at least worked for the people at the jungle pretty regularly. For all the places he feels alien and awkward, clubs are always easy. High energy, lots of movement, people forgetting themselves, acting out. He closes his eyes and lets himself go for a minute, pretends they're back home, that when they leave they'll get in the Camaro and drive to Derek's apartment, that Derek will fuck him for the first time in his own bed. When Styles opens his eyes, he's finished the beer and he's feeling lightheaded already, the day's exertions and the booze hitting him double whammy hard. "Maybe we should ditch this place and go home," he murmurs in Derek's ear, barely even vocalizing, certain that Derek will hear. "You look so pretty, I just want to eat you up." And his arms are still around Derek, so he can feel it, the way Derek's entire body goes absolutely rigid, a snarl flashing across his normally placid face. "Oh my God, Derek, what?" Styles asks, throwing up his hands, not backing off because there's no room, nowhere to go. And Derek gets control of himself almost as fast as he lost it, grabs Styles by one wrist and holds him there, not hard, but firm. "I'm sorry," he says. "Shit, I'm sorry, you just... For a second, you sounded like someone. It doesn't matter. It's okay. Sorry. Do you want another drink?" "I don't want another drink," Styles says, pulling away, shoving people aside as he heads for the door. "I may never want a drink again, or at least not until you tell me what the fuck is going on with you." Derek actually asks, "Do I have to?" His voice too loud in the sudden quiet of the outdoors, the night still billowing hot and dark all around them. "You don't have to," Styles says, "but we can't. I can't do this. If you're lying or keeping secrets, if you freak out like that when I say, I don't even know what I said, Derek. I can't stop doing it if I don't know what it is. And we were doing okay. We were doing really well until this morning. And there's only one thing that changed, right? So just tell me if it's too much, if you want me to stop, if you didn't even..." "I know things are a little more complicated than usual right now, but we're still friends, right? Forget the part where you're fucking me and just trust me now, please." Styles feels his voice get small. He was angry, but now he's pleading. Now he's scared that it's irrevocable, whatever he screwed up. "Please let me help you," he says. "You don't have to do anything else, but just let me, please let me." Derek looks stricken and desperate. Later, Styles will look back and understand that he's caught at the edge of a cliff in this moment, that Styles is standing there screaming at him to jump. Who the fuck cares? Just jump already. He can't know that now, though. Can't fathom what it means when Derek draws his shoulders together, takes a long, long inhale, and blows it out with a soft sigh. "Let's get back to the hotel room," he says. "I can explain it there." Sometimes Styles forgets that 2 years isn't that long to have known someone. After all they've been through together, he can't fathom that he didn't know or guess, didn't think about Kate and how she got into that house in the first place. But there are hundreds, maybe thousands of secrets in Derek's life. Little details like favorite books and first kisses, and behind them the big ones, the dark, scary stuff Derek's been keeping hidden carefully away. When Derek finishes talking, Stiles goes into the bathroom and retches dryly, stomach and throat working, but he can't bring anything up. Can't get rid of the awful feeling sitting low and rotten in his gut. He lies down on the floor, presses his cheek to the cold porcelain of the toilet. Doesn't think too hard about how clean either of those surfaces might be. Eventually, he drinks a little water and comes out to find Derek still sitting on the bed where he left him, face blankly neutral, eyes far away. "I'm sorry," Stiles says. "I'm sorry. That was probably the least helpful thing I could have done, so I can't believe I didn't know. I feel awful." Derek shrugs. "I could have told you before," he says. "I could have told you all a long time ago. It's not your job to know everything about me. It's not your job to keep me from getting hurt." "Then what else am I good for?" Stiles bursts out, unable to restrain himself. "That's what I do, Derek. I do the research and figure things out. I make plans, I look out for you. I'm not useful if I'm not taking care."
"You don't need to be useful," Derek says. "You're pack."
"Oh," Stiles says. He's not sure he's ever understood that before. That being pack isn't an active role, isn't boss, brain, muscle, or backup. It's just family. It's the way Derek's mouth felt before they kissed last night, still and open and offering against his own. "I've seen a number of therapists," Derek goes on. "I know I seem like I'm a mess, but trust me, I'm better about it than I used to be. This is probably really a step in the right direction. It's just hard. It's scary. It's harder than I thought it would be, but I don't want to stop."
"Neither do I," Stiles says, dizzy all over again, sinking onto the bed next to Derek, but not touching him, not yet.
"I feel like I just found you. I don't want this to be over now, so soon."
"So we'll figure it out," Derek says. "We'll find a way. I'll get better about it and you can stop worrying so much. We'll figure each other out for a little while, okay?"
"Yeah, okay," Stiles says. "Can we sleep first?"
They spend the night on top of the covers, in jeans and t-shirts, teeth unbrushed, mouths gritty and dry. Derek's body assumes the same protective curl it did on that first night, only now Stiles is tucked right against the curve of it, his arms wound tightly around Derek, fingers clutched hard at the ridge of his shoulder and the bend of his waist. There are dried tears in his eyelashes, salt crystals sticking them together. The tracks will be faintly visible down the line of his face in the morning, in the pure, clean light of day.
Interlude, Austin, Texas. Stiles is usually a restless sleeper, but he wakes in the same position he drifted off in, his body anchored tightly against Derek's, like a ship docked in the harbor. He stirs slightly in the waking, and Derek stirs with him, rolling like the waves, mumbling nonsense against the top of Stiles's head. He should feel scared, Stiles thinks. He should feel sick and worried and terrified, but this is just a new wrinkle in Derek's old familiar story, the pain of his past deeper and more complex, but still the same, in the end. A history of hurt that Stiles can't solve, can only try to soothe when it bubbles up into the present. He's glad that they have a whole day in Austin, some time out of the car to stretch their legs and explore, to keep out of another's reach for an hour or two, to see how that feels. Stiles wakes Derek with a mouth on his jaw, pressing kisses against the vulnerable underside, feeling stubble scrape against his chin, his mouth. Derek's always had a 5 o'clock shadow, but he's starting to get scruffier, worn soft and shaggy by long days on the road. Stiles can't help but love it, this undone side of him that no one else gets to see and keep. "Come on," he says, "rise and shine, Derek." Derek groans a little bit, finds a hand to press against Stiles' open mouth. No, he says. Sleep. Stiles nips at Derek's palm, wriggles gently out of his grip, satisfied that Derek won't take it for betrayal or abandonment if he just needs to piss or maybe get some coffee. You sleep, Stiles agrees, shucking his filthy jeans and sweaty t-shirt. I'm gonna get provisions. Derek doesn't even say anything, buries his face against the bit of pillow where Stiles' head was last night, with his eyes still tightly shut. It's early still, not yet 10 a.m., the sky soft, pale blue overhead, cloudless and already brutally hot. Stiles walks up the block and finds a little stand that does breakfast, orders two coffees and a croissant for himself, breakfast tacos for Derek. There's a wait while they assemble the tacos, so he drowns his coffee in cream and fumbles out his phone, dialing Scott's number before he can think better of it. Stiles what? Scott says by way of greeting, voice thick with sleep and irritation. You better be dead or, I don't know, pregnant with Derek's baby if you're calling me this early. It's almost 10 a.m. on a weekday, Stiles says, grin so wide it might split his face. This is the oldest and most familiar argument, a relic of grade school sleepovers. Stiles is an early riser, wakes with the sun and can't fall back asleep, where Scott has been a teenager since he was 7, always eager to close the blinds and get in another hour or 3. I'm going back to sleep, like, the minute you stop talking, so give me the short version. How is it? It's really good, Stiles says, turning to watch the street in front of him, people walking their dogs, picking up coffee, driving to work. It's, I'm really glad I'm doing it. Oh, that's fascinating, Scott says. I'm so glad you woke me up to tell me how, good your road trip is. And Stiles thinks, not for the first time, that spending his formative years with Peter and Derek and Stiles has upped Scott's sass-o-meter in a really unfortunate way. Seriously, though, he goes on, subsiding a little bit, how's life with Derek? Stiles scrubs a hand over his face, lets out a long breath before answering. He wishes Scott was there with him, so that he could smell the sharp flush of arousal that runs through Stiles' body and just know, without him having to explain in words. How is Derek? Christ, Derek's amazing. It turns out that he likes to talk dirty. He likes to watch. He likes Stiles. It's complicated. Derek is always complicated. But he's trusting, now, in a way that's thrilling and entirely new. Stiles doesn't say any of that, though, despite years of listening to the gory details of Scott and Allison's Your Body is a Wonderland phase. We're, he says, hooking up? That's definitely happening. It's been happening since New Mexico. It almost happened in Arizona, but I was drunk. You were drunk? Scott interrupts. So the fake is working. I fucking knew it. That's so awesome. I was thinking about getting one just so I can, like, hang out at bars in Santa Cruz. Not that I need it, because, you know, but... Oh my god, Stiles says. Tell me you love me. Tell me you fucking love me, man. I'm about to change your life. Someone shouts Stiles' name to let him know the tacos are ready. So he picks them up and walks back to the hotel with his phone wedged between his ear and shoulder, chattering excitedly with Scott about werewolf weed and the possibilities for stoned forest runs when Stiles comes to visit Santa Cruz. It's insanely comforting talking to Scott like this, catching him up on the details. Scott coming back around at the end of the conversation to rib Stiles again about the Derek thing, cautioning him about pregnancy and disease in solemn tones before they hang up. It's been 5 days, but it feels like a lifetime. Watching every mile between Beacon Hills and New Orleans means that Stiles knows it acutely, how far away he's really going. This is going to be how it is for the next few years, finding out what's happened on the phone, but he can live with it, he thinks. Of course they'll figure it out. Stiles puts down the tray with their coffee cups, paper bag of breakfast balanced precariously on top, and slips his phone into his pocket, pulling out their room key. I brought you meat, he says to Derek, and coffee. Derek is up already, glowering over his phone. You're damn right you did. Seriously, Stiles, why do I have a text from Scott that says, Werewolf weed recipe now, dickhead? It's actually 1,000,000 degrees outside, and Stiles keeps thinking he'll get used to that, but every state has its own unique recipe for blasting heat. Arizona's dry and steady. Texas's version, perhaps unsurprisingly, huge and oppressive. Apparently New Orleans is humid, and he can't even imagine that, what it'll be like, swamp soup on his skin. The desk clerk at their motel suggests Barton Springs for a swim, so they drive over and get in the water as quickly as possible, bobbing like corks, splashing and swimming, and sometimes kissing lazily, Derek reaching out to snag Stiles and draw him in close. It's still before noon on Friday, and there's no one much around yet, just the two of them and the trees that overhang the river, the sweep of grassy hills above them. There's a concession stand, so they eat hot dogs for lunch, ice cream after, napping on their towels on the hill as the place starts to really fill up. There are a ton of little kids and sprawling groups of teenagers, parents on idle this late in the summer, sunning and chatting and paying minimal attention. The fifth time the same group of girls saunter by in teeny tiny bikinis, eyeing Derek with frank appraisal, Stiles decides that enough is enough. He kisses Derek, thorough and filthy, before suggesting they get the hell out of there. The only thing is the Jeep, which is definitely starting to falter after a couple thousand miles of driving in 90-degree sunshine. The vents blast in hot air from the outside instead of AC, and when they park at the motel, there seems to be smoke coming from under the hood, so Stiles nicks his afternoon delight in favor of hunting down a decent mechanic and getting his baby seen to, nervously checking his bank balance, doing some fairly terrifying mental math while they wait. It's fluids, for starters, maybe an O-ring, something about the radiator. Stiles nods seriously while the mechanic talks, absorbing nothing except the number at the end, which is serious but not ruinous. "It won't be ready until Sunday," the guy says, and Stiles wishes he knew the first thing about cars, enough to argue or put off non-crucial repairs until New Orleans, but he doesn't, has never had the patience for it, so it looks like they're stuck in Austin an extra day, which is fine, probably. Throws off his schedule, but freshman orientation starts Monday morning, so he won't miss any crucial information about how to do laundry or where to find food. Still, he's irritated by it. He was looking forward to a long, lazy day in New Orleans with Derek, just the two of them discovering his new city together. It can't be helped, though, and Stiles is actually secretly impressed with the Jeep for even making it this far. He gives her a proud little thump before they leave, whispers, "Good job, baby." And Derek hears him and rolls his eyes. They take a cab back to the hotel and head to their room, draw the curtains against the harsh glare of mid-afternoon light. Stiles turns on the TV and flips through channels until he finds an episode of Law and Order he hasn't seen yet. Derek fiddles around, repacks his bag, smokes half of one of the leftover joints with the window cracked against the smell. Only then does he curl up next to Stiles on the bed, pressing a soft kiss to the exposed skin of Stiles' elbow, where it crooks up so Stiles can rest his head on his hands. "Haven't you seen enough of this?" Derek asks softly when it breaks for a commercial. Stiles shakes his head. "Nah, dude, I love this show. It's like different crime, same plot structure every time, you know? It's a perfect mix of interesting and familiar. I find it very comforting." "Oh," Derek says. "Yeah, no, I meant all the violence." Stiles shifts so they're face to face on the mattress, Derek distorted and surreal this close up.
"I guess I don't think about it that way,"
he says, reaching a free hand to stroke Derek's shoulder, his arm, pausing just briefly to marvel at the thick cord of muscle, all of the gathered strength under his fingers.
"Some of the things we went through were brutal. I mean, they were hard. They were real. They happen to me. They're not like watching something on screen, you know?"
Derek sighs, closing his eyes. "I don't know whether to be sorry anymore," he says, so low Stiles almost can't hear him. "I don't know what I need to be sorry for and what can be forgiven." Stiles thinks about all of the things he's been through, Scott getting the bite, and the endless horrifying mess of their sophomore year, all of the weirdness and violence since. The times he's been scared and hurt. The times people he loves have been scared and hurt. He tries to imagine what it's like for Derek, for whom this started years ago, who's always seen himself, in one way or another, as the cause of it all. "Who would you ask?" Stiles says, finally, trying very hard to be careful. "Who would make you feel better if they forgave you, if they offered you absolution?" "I don't know," Derek says.
I don't think I've ever gotten that far. I'm not saying you should feel guilty, Stiles says. I'm not saying I have a clue what the answer is. But I think you might want to consider that the question is enough in your case. It's more important that you ask it than that anyone gives you an answer. Derek nods slowly, doesn't say anything, so Stiles goes on. I'm glad I got to hear it then. It means a lot to me, Derek, that you trust me enough for this, that you think I'm worth telling, worth asking. You really mean that, don't you? Derek asks, eyes still closed, breathing light and shallow and quick. Which means you think I'm worth it, Stiles says, leaning up and over to kiss at the corner of Derek's mouth, the shell of his ear, the line of his neck. Yeah, you're right, I do. This isn't about you being pretty, Derek flinches visibly at the word, or me wanting to fuck someone familiar. I stuck around all those years because I thought you were worth it. I wanted to know you better because I wanted more. I've always wanted to be around you. Well, not always, always. But since I started considering it, since I started taking care, I came back, Derek, as soon as I was ready. I've always come back when I could. Okay, Derek says, and opens his eyes, regards Stiles frank and full for a long moment. Okay. When Derek kisses him, it's like the tide coming in, all salt and rush and drugging undertow, pulling Stiles down with it. He surrenders gracefully. He gives it up. It's the kind of kissing that doesn't allow for breath or pause. Derek manages to shove Stiles' shorts down to his knees, and Stiles kicks them the rest of the way off, working Derek's zipper one-handed, sucking a hickey to match the one Derek gave him yesterday at the base of Derek's throat. Eventually, somehow, they're both shirtless and naked, really naked, an ocean of shifting skin, warm and soft and smelling sweetly of sage and sweat. Derek's weight pins Stiles at the hips, but he surges up and again, trying to say, yes, I'm here, yes, this. And Derek seems to understand, holds him in place just to keep a grip on him, thrusting their hips together, gasping at the sight of pre-cum beating, sticky and thick against Stiles' slit. I love this, Stiles hears himself saying. I love it like this. So perfect. So good. Derek just listens. He takes it in and rolls his hips, keeping time. His palms are huge and hot against Stiles' dick, a little too much friction even though he's leaking already, so hard he feels like he might just burst. Stiles whines, and Derek seems to get it, licks his palm, then pauses, looking down. I'm gonna suck you off, he says, voice all gravel and smoke. I want to taste you. I want to taste you at the back of my throat all over. And Stiles bucks up into the empty air, already missing Derek's weight where it's shifting down his body. Do it, he hisses, and then please, oh my God, please. Derek's mouth is even hotter than his hands, a fucking furnace, so soft and warm and wet that Stiles feels tears forming in his eyes, has to clutch onto the bedposts behind him to keep himself from holding Derek's head in place and fucking right into his mouth. Fuck. I'm gonna come soon, he manages, and Derek sucks him down deeper, still a little tentative, but also clearly loving it, making little slick noises with his mouth that Stiles fucking loves. He's starting to lose control, hips jerking up helplessly, and Derek presses him down with one hand, almost effortless. That's when Stiles loses it, thinking about Derek's arms and hands and shoulders. How he could rend Stiles limb from limb, but instead he's sucking on Stiles' cock like he can't get enough of it, drooling a little bit, tender and fierce, no thought on his mind but making it good for Stiles, making him fall apart like this. His orgasm is so intense that afterwards he feels strung out and boneless, presses weakly at Derek when he rears up and starts jerking himself off, quick and efficient, saying, "No, come on, just give me a minute." Derek leans over and whispers in his ear, though, says, I'm gonna come on you so you smell like me. Let me. Just let me. You can suck me later. And Stiles thinks he's really going to die. His body is just going to give out,
as he feels Derek coming, splattering wet and warm and sticky on his stomach, on his chest. The television is still playing in the background. The au pair did it, killed the father because he wouldn't leave his wife for her. Stiles blinks muzzily at the screen for a minute before fumbling for the remote, shutting it off. Love is dangerous and combustible in the wrong hands, but then they already know this. He doesn't need the reminder, and neither does Derek. Not like this, at the beginning.
Day 8. New Orleans, Louisiana. The car is ready early on Sunday, and they're on the road by 11 a.m. Stiles is drinking coffee and eating a donut, agitated, animated, while he drives. Derek is glad to be back on track. As lovely as their Austin interlude was, Stiles endlessly willing and pliant in the cool sheets, the sweet cold air of their hotel room against the flesh of his skin, it's clear that Stiles is starting to look ahead, to get impatient for college and beginning, being there. Derek feels oddly calm about this. He's been missing Beacon Hills and his morning runs in the preserve, wondering what Scott and Isaac and Boyd are up to, anxious to be making progress on the house again. It's what he's always wanted, actually, to have a life of his own to return to, to know that his pack have lives of their own to look forward to. He had often worried that he would feel abandoned when it happened, that if he managed to push his little werebirds out of the nest, he'd end up lonely and miserable. But he's starting to see that this might not happen after all, that the worst-case scenario isn't coming, that trust can pay off, at least in the short term. The miles of highway roll by, blank and familiar, vegetation getting denser and greener as they move south and east. When Stiles gets out to pee at a gas station in Houston, it's humid. The air feels different, smells different, and Derek marvels at it. Just the distances, physical and measurable, how far it is they've come. "I might call my dad when we switch," Stiles says once they're back on the highway. "If that's okay with you?" "That's fine," Derek says. "That's... you should talk to him." "I've been texting him when we get in every night, but I was thinking..." Stiles says, and then stops, abruptly, like he's just finished an actual sentence. "Thinking?" Derek prompts. "Yeah, sorry," Stiles says. "I've been thinking about a lot of things, I guess. Anyway, it was just really good to talk to Scott yesterday. I just hadn't realized, you know, that it takes work a little bit. You have to remind yourself to keep in touch, but that it's nice when you do, so, yeah." "It's fine with me," Derek says again, and doesn't ask what he's really wondering, which is when or if Stiles is going to tell the sheriff about what's been happening between the two of them. Not in too many words, of course, and maybe that means there's nothing to tell. Derek is pretty sure that there's more going on than just the mutual brain-blinding orgasms. But he can't call it dating, and won't call it what it feels like. The stirring beginnings of falling in love. He thought he was falling in love with Kate when it was happening. When she let him fuck her, frantic and desperate in her car like she couldn't wait. It all felt brain-blinding then. Everything so filthy and unimaginable and new. The things she let him do to her. Now he wishes he could go back and tell his younger self, show him what it's like to have two fingers inside of Stiles, moving slow and steady, Stiles's eyes wide and trusting, all of him spread out against a sea of wrinkled white sheets. The way they can talk a little bit,
during, after. That's nothing, he wants to say to himself. Everything Kate gave you is nothing to what it feels like when someone really lets you inside. But that boy is long gone, and Derek tries not to mourn him, so he says it now, to himself instead. In Louisiana, they drive across a series of long, narrow highways, cement barriers on either side as they pass over rivers and streams, lakes and swamps. New Orleans, when they arrive, turns out to be a hot, wet city of warped wood and sagging brick, purple and yellow houses, palm trees, and the smell of old water. Enough magic that Derek can feel it, a little itch across his palms. Styles seems to feel it too, lit up and grinning as they pilot their way down the narrow streets of the French Quarter, pausing for drunk tourists and irritated locals at every intersection, into the middle of the streets. They're staying at a bed and breakfast in the Marigny, an old, beautiful house with a bed so high up that Styles has to vault onto it, skidding across the covers as he lands. "I'm gonna have to be quiet tonight," he observes, raising one eyebrow in Derek's direction, and it's still gratifying and new to be flirted with, to have Styles bold and easy, making overtures. "Yeah," Derek says, crawling up next to Styles, kissing him open-mouthed. Styles stretches like a cat under him, his body one lean, luxuriant line. "We need to get dinner," Derek says, tearing himself away. Styles makes a little bereft noise and sits up behind Derek, wrapping his limbs around whatever he can reach. "You started it," Styles says. "That is completely unfair." But he kisses Derek's temple once, and rolls off the other side of the bed, starts hunting around for his wallet so that they can go. The Marigny is all cute coffee shops and bars, broke gutter punks with dogs and bandanas, hipster tourists wandering around. They drive out to Ignatius, which Styles found on Yelp, and eat there, walk up Magazine Street afterwards, holding hands even though it's dirty, sticky, the air thick as mud. There's a soft sheen on everything, Styles' forehead and his mouth and the nape of his neck. It's a little bit gross, and mostly kind of hot, the way Styles smells like himself all over, open at every pore. Derek can see how well Styles is going to fit in here. Music spills out of the bars, loud and raunchy, all of it lively and casual, lit up. He dances a little bit while they walk, sweeps Derek into his arms at stoplights, kisses the corners of his mouth, free and easy. Whatever spark is in Styles, the city has in spades. He makes sense here in a way he never did in quiet, woodsy Beacon Hills. "Don't leave me," Derek whispers against the back of Styles' shoulder, pressing his mouth there, but Styles can't hear him, turns and smiles and catches Derek's guilty eye, but doesn't say anything, doesn't ask. They end up at the Saint, a dingy little bar with cheap beer and good music, a dance floor so teemingly packed that Derek doesn't even mind being in the middle of it, as long as he's got Styles wrapped around him, right in the vicinity. There's enough cigarette smoke to mask the scent of almost everything else, so he smokes the last half of his Austin joint while they dance. The beat moves through him like water. Styles keeps his hand on Derek, guiding him. "God, what you look like," Styles murmurs against his ear. "I love you like this, when you let loose like this." And he blushes as he realizes, breath stuttering in his throat. Even in the noise and chaos, Derek can hear him, pick out the questioning tempo of the beat of his heart. "It's just for you," Derek says, equally private, curving one hand around the back of Styles' neck and kissing him. Kissing him so long that they stop dancing, really. Styles' body pinned up against Derek's, and the two of them just filthy with it, open-mouthed and desperate. "I love being like this for you," Derek says into the skin of Styles' neck, where he can't possibly hear it. "Can we go?" Styles asks, and Derek doesn't need urging. They kiss in the car on the way back,
urgent and careless. And Derek thinks, I'm gonna do it. We're going to... His brain stuttering on and off at the thought until they're back in the hotel room. Until finally, it's time. Derek has fucked Styles with his fingers, has let Styles brush experimentally against his own asshole while Styles is blowing him. Derek's body all arousal, everything equally shocky good. Tonight, though, he moves with intention, works Styles open braced over him, mouthing at whatever skin he can reach. Whatever Styles said earlier about being quiet is a distant memory, and neither of them can stop talking, stop saying things that Derek is sure he'll regret in the morning when Styles leaves for good. You're gonna fuck me, right? Styles says, hips writhing without rhythm into air. Put your cock in me, please, Derek. You can't just use your fingers. I'm dying. I want to know how it feels, please. At the same time, Derek is saying, yes, fuck, yes, don't worry. I'm not going to be able to help myself. I can't wait to be inside you for real. Styles' eyes wide and wondering. He flinches a little bit when Derek gets a third finger in, erection subsiding slightly at the stretch and burn. Derek watches his dick thicken again as he gets used to it, starts fucking back against Derek's hand, saying, now, please, now, until Derek can't hold back any longer. Slicks on a condom and starts to press in. It's been a long time since Derek has done this. Let himself be enveloped. Let himself go. He moves as slowly as he can manage. Styles is breathing, erratic and harsh. The two of them suddenly quiet, focused on nothing more than the achingly slow merge of their bodies. Am I hurting you? Derek asks at one point, words coming out in a soft slur. Yeah, Styles says. It hurts. You hurt. No, don't stop, Derek. Don't stop. So he doesn't. He just keeps moving, in and out, a little more and a little more, trying to ignore the frantic hummingbird thrum of Styles' heart against his ribs. It's hard, though. It's hard to go slow when it feels so fucking good, and at some point he loses control, pushes in too far, too fast. Feels the flare of sudden hurt when Styles bites off a startled gasp. Derek pulls all the way out, dick aching for lack of pressure, the loss of friction. Styles sits up with him saying, no, 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 come back, it's okay, I want you to. And Derek has no choice but to trust him, to keep going, even though it feels like it's been hours, like it will never be over. They're both sweating and shaking when Derek finally gets all the way inside, Styles' legs sliding down helplessly in the sheets. I love you like this, he says, looking up, looking fierce and tender. I love you, Derek. I love you. And Derek manages two, maybe three shallow thrusts before he's coming, biting down too hard on Styles' shoulder, muttering, of course I love you. I love you too. Before blacking out just a little bit, overwhelmed, exhausted, sated, safe. In the morning light, Derek can see the bruises forming all over Styles, on his neck and throat and at his hips, the ridges of Derek's teeth imprinted in the curve of Styles' right shoulder. He wakes up before Styles' alarm goes off and slips out to get coffee and croissants, walking alone through the still early air, thinking, somehow, of nothing at all. When he gets back, Styles is sitting up in bed, sleepy-eyed and scowling. He bats away Derek's breakfast offering and pulls him back under the sheets, wraps his body around Derek's like an octopus, all arms. I'm scared, he says, soft. I've spent the last 3 years fighting for my life and defeating evil, and I'm scared of freshman mixers. How fucking stupid is that? It's not stupid, Derek says. College students are terrifying and awful. College students are the worst. Hey, Styles says, not helpful. Also, offensive. You're terrible at pep talks. Is this a surprise? Derek asks, nosing against the imprint his mouth made last night. Styles' body is like a map, like a landscape. It shows the routes Derek took, the places he touched, all the things Styles has been through written on his skin. It's Derek who doesn't change, who remains outwardly unaffected. The Triskelet was in part to honor his family, but mostly just to see if he could do it, if he could endure enough to make his skin his own. "You'll be fine," he says, because he doesn't know what else to say. "I'm scared of what happens when you leave, then," Styles says. "I'm scared of that, too." Derek doesn't say anything. He doesn't see a possible solution, can't imagine a way to make it work. Long distance is a miserable slog, and he knows Styles, knows he's going to fall in love hard and fast with brilliant women and shy, beautiful men, knows he needs space to explore and time to figure it out. "I am old and stable," Derek murmurs into Styles' skin, whispering secrets that, for once, Styles can hear. "I'll be waiting for you when you get back." "But you... I can't ask that," Styles says. "I can't ask anything if I can't make any promises. I love you, and that's probably always, Derek. That's probably a forever thing. But I can't guarantee the next few years, and I don't want to fuck it up." "No one can guarantee anything," Derek says. "I think that might be the point." "Trust, you mean?" "Trust, yeah, that. Talking about it. Saying what we mean, when we mean it." "I love you," Styles breathes, drunk on the way his words sound. "I love you," Derek says, like an incantation, like a spell. Styles sucks Derek off before he leaves, walks out the door reeking of sex and sweat and power, looking cocky and terrified in equal measure. Derek takes a shower because he's not a gross animal like Styles, spends the day prowling around the city, trying to read, trying to people watch, trying to do anything other than feel stupid and lonely in the sudden quiet of Styles' absence. His plane isn't until early tomorrow morning, and he's not sure he'll be able to sleep tonight, in the big bed without Styles' body to fill it up. He's sitting at a cafe drinking coffee and eating beignets, having given up on making any use of the day, when an older couple wanders by. It's getting dim as evening comes on, but it's unmistakable, the way they sniff the air and loop back around, getting a good look at him. Derek feels prickly and uncomfortable, grateful at least that Styles isn't around for whatever's about to happen. They made it through a whole week without werewolf mess intervening, and if it has to happen, Derek is glad Styles won't be around to see and worry and end up in the middle. The couple sits right down at his table. Up close, they look kind and open, smile lines sharp at the corner of their eyes. This doesn't necessarily mean anything, Derek knows, but he takes it as a good sign, tries to will himself to relax even slightly. "You're a long way from home," the man says, which is only mildly worrying, as openings go. Derek nods cautiously. "Just passing through?" the woman asks. "Visiting a friend," Derek says, edging carefully around the truth. "Leaving tomorrow." "No need to be anxious," the man says, smiling wide and bright. "I'm sorry if we're coming off threatening. Just curious. It's not often that we get our kind of visitors passing through. These days. Seems like everyone's been sticking closer to home the last few years." "I needed a break," Derek says, and he hears Styles' voice echoing down the hallway in Los Angeles, what seems like 100 years ago, telling Michael that very thing. "I'm going home tomorrow." "Where's home?" the woman asks. "California," Derek says. "I have a pack there." "Where in California?" she asks, leaning in a little, looking sharp. "Beacon Hills," Derek says, and his fears are confirmed when the man whistles in response, a shocked, low sound. "I'm Derek Hale." "We're sorry for your loss," the woman says. "We heard all about that. All the way over here, even. If we'd known I'd..." "I'm Alma, by the way." Derek sticks out a hand to shake hers, and immediately feels ashamed of the stupid human reflex. She takes it, though, doesn't say anything, looking at him intently. He's heard those words before a million times, always a condescending platitude, something useless and bitter about the way they sound. "Your loss. We're sorry. We're glad it's not our loss, though." "Mo," the man says, shaking Derek's hand in turn. "I'm sure our Alpha would love to meet you, Derek. You don't have dinner plans?" Derek doesn't have plans, tonight or ever, really. And suddenly he's hungry for it. A house full of adult wares, for sage hanging in the corners and over the doorways, bestiaries on the bookshelves, the ritual greeting, the evening meal. He's avoided other packs since the fire, the almost families that will never be his. But Derek is thinking now about Jason and Michael, about the way Stiles' family extends across the state, the country, the people who have loved those you've loved, and the way they're willing to take you in. "Sure," he says. "I would appreciate that." Derek finishes his coffee, and they walk to the Alpha's house together in the gathering dusk. Her name is Maria, and she's scary and beautiful. Derek is glad all over again that Stiles isn't around to trip over himself in response to the power that comes off of her in easy rolling waves. He greets her properly, bowing his head and lowering his eyes, letting her sniff at the skin of his neck before he scents her in return. "Welcome," she says, solemn, and Derek says, "Thank you for your welcome." The old words ready for him after all these years. Maria's pack is an old one, big and strong and sprawling, a neighborhood's worth of families and four generations at least. Derek meets the marriageable women and, when they sense his discomfort, the eligible men. He doesn't know these customs as well, but he manages, thinking ahead to alliances and networks, maybe mates for Isaac and Boyd. Everyone knows his story, so no one pushes. Derek Hale is at least a paragraph, and some of the older wolves eye him sadly, keeping their distance as if it might be catching. Mostly, though, everyone is lovely, and over dinner Derek finds himself talking about them. His family. He names them each, at one point or another, for the first time in years. Layla and Scott, his parents, and Emma and Aaron, his brother and sister. Laura, last of all. Walking home, Derek feels like champagne uncorked, fizzy with words, suddenly flush with all the telling. It was easy, somehow, in a way it had never been easy before. In a way he's pretty sure has to do with wrenching the words out of himself for Stiles in that Austin hotel room. In the way Stiles stayed, and stayed after. Drew Derek in closer and kept him safe. He's already giddy when his phone lights up with Stiles' number, Stiles' voice in his ears saying, "We're at an awful bar and it's so loud and no one believes that you exist. Will you please come let them look at you and then take me home and fuck me?" And Derek laughs and laughs, saying yes even as he's hailing down a cab and heading there, fast as he can. Stiles' roommate, Leon, is making out with a girl from down the hall when they leave the bar, so Derek figures they have the room to themselves for an hour or two at least. Stiles is tipsy and handsy, murmuring nonsense against Derek's skin as they walk across campus to his dorm. The room is tiny and institutional, white and beige and boring. It smells antiseptic, not at all like Stiles' room at home. There are touches, though. Stiles' familiar books on his desk, clothes already thrown around in heaps, pictures tacked up on the wall above his bed. There's Scott and Boyd in full lacrosse gear, looking jockey and confident and on top of the world. Lydia cutting Isaac's hair on the Hale House porch. Allison and Scott's prom picture. The sheriff, when he was younger, leaning jauntily against a cop car. Stiles' mother,
holding him as a baby in her lap. The only picture of Derek is his glare-spotted mugshot. He looks at it, and then at Stiles, shaking his head in disbelief. "This?" he says, and Stiles crowds up against him eagerly, kissing into Derek's open mouth. "Yeah," he says eventually. "That's my favorite picture of you. From when you were a mystery and the world was a mess. I like that you can see who you really are. All of you. Not just your dumb face. I just like it, okay? I don't have to explain myself." "You don't," Derek says, quiet, serious, framing Stiles' face with his hands and feeling it. The soft skin and prickle and rasp of stubble starting to form. The sharp lines of Stiles' cheekbones. The small, fragile skull against his palms. Stiles loves Derek when he's dangerous, when he's faceless, when he's scared and sad and out of control. Stiles loves Derek when he's invisible and obscured, as he's revealing himself always. "I want you to fuck me," Derek says, and Stiles' eyes get wide, even wider, mouth falling open into a soft, wet O. "Yes," Derek says, and Stiles nods frantically, kisses him deep and thorough and dirty, wasting no time getting his hands down Derek's pants. Derek's never done this before, but his body is easier than Stiles's was, happy to adjust to the intrusion, eager to be touched. It feels like hours, like no time at all, until Stiles is pressed inside him and breathing hard, petting his hands over Derek's chest and trying to steady himself, trying to keep still. He can't, though, hips working continuously in tiny little movements, endless jolts of friction and pressure, so that Derek can't keep track, can't calm down. He opens himself to it, lets himself get carried away. His body is responsive and animal, all Stiles is, unafraid. He barely even notices the build of his orgasm, Stiles' hand tight on his dick while their hips find a matching rhythm, the whole pull of it tidal, and he comes for long, shaking minutes, pulsing again and again. Derek doesn't sleep for a long time after. He lies there breathing, inhale, exhale, trading oxygen with Stiles in his brand new room. Tomorrow he'll get on a plane and fly back home. Stiles will stay here and do what he has to, what he wants. He'll keep Derek's stories, keep the last years and the last week and the last hour safe with him. Think of it when he sees Derek's face obscured by light above his bed. "And then I don't know what happens next," Derek thinks. "I have absolutely no idea." It feels huge and terrifying, his body brilliant, exhausted, jubilant. "This is what mercy feels like," Derek thinks, looking at Stiles asleep in his arms. "This is what I've been waiting for, what I asked for at last. This is mercy. This is grace."
Spring and not summer cool. where it's gone.